Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe with Mike McDowell and Simone Carlos.
Hello, I'm Simone Carlos.
And I'm Mike McDowell.
Welcome to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, the show that explores what it really takes to live, work and build a business in Spain.
Whatever your line of work, this is the place for you.
Maybe you own a cafe, or perhaps you lead a team of 100 people. No matter your situation, along with our guests and experts, we're here to offer guidance to help you succeed.
You never know, you might be inspired to start your own company or make positive changes to an existing business.
We might have the solution you've been looking for.
So drop us a line, tell us your story, let us know also if you have a question about a particular aspect of starting or running a company in Spain, big or small. As always, Simone will answer your questions later on in the show. Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. That is simone@tre.radio. You're probably wondering what all that racket is. Well, Simone and I have escaped the studio and we're in the car.
And we'll explain why in a moment. Right now, pour yourself a glass of something cold and join us for this travelling edition of Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe.
Okay, we are coming up to the roundabout at the end of Avenida Ausias March, which is notorious, so I had better focus on the road.
We are right now on V31, heading into the centre of Valencia.
We are on our way to meet transplanted Brit Jeremy Robson to talk about his exciting new business venture, Robson Studios.
Robson Studios is going to be an amazing event space right in the heart of the city.
There will be people of all nationalities and events of all descriptions, from photo shoots to exhibitions to book launches and pretty much anything you can think of.
We'll be there in a few minutes. In the meantime, let's tell you about who we'll be chatting to later in the show.
In part two, I have the pleasure of talking to Matilda Lowhouse. Matilda runs a business selling laundry room cabinets, which might sound rather odd, but they are a really good idea.
This is an idea that came actually from my brother-in-law. He had a background in kitchens, and he always thought, why is there not a furniture a cabinet that exists where you could put your wash machine in? So just so have it higher up, so you don't have to bend to do the washing. Because it's a bit like with ovens in kitchens. You know, before, in the older days, we had them under the hob. They were lower down. And now there's always on a height where it's easy to introduce your baking trays or whatever, and for the washing machines and dryers, it would be the same. Instead of bending and finding the program that you need, you know, you have everything on a level, which is just a lot easier to use. And it's like a modular system, so it's a bit like the IKEA system, where you can build your own and design your own, where you can put cabinets on the top or on the sides. You can make it as big as a full kitchen. And it's something that really didn't exist. And it doesn't exist in Spain either. Luckily, I'm the only one. And it's very diverse as well, because I am the one that answers the phone if I do customer service. So if people want to have a question or something, I pick up the phone. If there is issues in the warehouse, because I do have the furniture stocked here in Malaga, so there's a part of a warehouse that I rent where I have all the furniture that comes from Holland. So every so often, a full truckload comes with all the furniture. And so if there's issues in the warehouse, I have to deal with the people in the warehouse, and I have to deal with clients and with my gestor, accounting, marketing, it's social media. It's quite a lot of different things to think about. But it was something new and very interesting, and luckily it's paying my bills.
And Mike will be talking to Matilda a little later in the program. In part three, I'll be tackling more of your questions. We have a full inbox again this week, and I will try to get through as many emails as I can.
Okay, back to Jeremy Robson. We have arrived, and we have a parking space. walking through the streets of Valencia on an absolutely glorious day. And here it is, number 6. Hi, how are you?
Hi, nice to meet you.
Good to see you, Jeremy. Yeah. Found you funnily. So we made it. We're in Valencia. And Jeremy, the first question I've got to ask you is how? Tell us how you broke your back.
So, yeah, a good place to start. Over years, there was a spinal issue, basically, and two vertebrae hit each other over time and it cracked. And, yeah, I lost all movement in my left leg. And I was, you know, generally quite young, so it was quite a shock. And I was traveling a lot, so obviously that was a big shock as well. And, yeah, so it wasn't any crazy accident, but it was just over time, a kind of spinal degradation, I guess. And then finally, when the movement was lost in my left leg, the doctor rushed me into the hospital for an operation for spinal fusion. And now I have 6 metal bolts in my spine, and, yeah, it'll stay like that forever.
Now, you work with people who've had spinal injuries, though, right? You help them.
Yeah, I want to get more into that. So basically, I am really strict with my routines. Every morning I do my yoga and fitness routines. And now I'm hoping to start my personal training or yoga certifications to have a bit more legitimacy behind it and hopefully teach a bit more of that as well. But I've always been really into fitness and yoga. I used to play really serious football when I grew up until I was 18. So yeah, fitness has always been a huge thing for me and the family. So I want to focus more on that. Partly, which is what's going to be in the studio.
So tell me, where did you grow up? Because your English obviously is perfect, but I detect an accent, but you have a British name. So what's your background?
So I was born in the UK, in Brighton, and literally 3 weeks after I was born, my parents went back to Tanzania, to Africa, where they were teaching in the International School of Dar es Salaam. So yeah, my mom was pregnant with me in Tanzania. We went to England, where I was born. 3 weeks after, we went back because they obviously had to go back to work. So I lived in Tanzania. I grew up in Tanzania as a baby for 2.5 years. And then after that, they wanted to move back to Europe to be a bit closer to the family in England. So they looked around for jobs in Europe and they were really interested in Eastern Europe. It's at that time, I think communism had fallen 5 years before. So it was really an exotic place still. And yeah, we ended up in Prague in the, teaching. My parents taught in the international school and I also went to the International School of Prague. And I lived there for about 20 years. And everyone there was American or international. So the accent is a blend of everything. And then after that, I moved to England to do my university and then Amsterdam to do my master's. And then I stayed in Amsterdam. And then I moved to Valencia after my operation. So about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
And what brought you to Valencia? Why? What attracted you to the city?
My parents, first of all. We traveled here a lot. And yeah, we always loved Italy and the Italian culture and Southern Europe and the Mediterranean culture. So they considered Italy as well. But they stopped working because they had worked in the same school and teaching for years and years. And I think they were really done with it. And they were looking for, you know, a good place to kind of semi-retire. But not retire, just semi-retire and still focus on what they loved. And they chose Valencia. And I actually came with them in the end because everything just fell together. My life in Amsterdam had finished. I was also tired of the rain, to be honest. And I really need the sun to be happy. So after my back operation, I had that was my life. I don't know, life exploded, the shock, right? That made me chase what I want. And all, not just me, all of us, my parents too. We finally got to the place where we're doing what we want completely. So it's, yeah, quite amazing.
We should say, I mean, you've come here with your parents, but you're not a child. You're an adult man with a beard. So you could have gone anywhere, really.
Yeah, so I did go to a lot of places. I lived in Nice for... So I was in Amsterdam for 5 years. But in that time, I actually was traveling most of the time. It was also COVID. And I actually traveled a lot during COVID, ironically, because my job went completely remote. So I kind of secretly traveled as much as I could. I lived in Nice in France, which is amazing. Munich as well for about a year. And they're all amazing cities. So honestly, I had experienced the best cities in Europe or in the world, in my opinion. And now I came to Valencia and I checked every box that I loved, right? The beach, the mountains, the culture, the food, the sun, all of it. And then I met my girlfriend as well. And she has a fantastic family here too. So I think the community just came together very easily because, yeah, checked all the boxes. So my parents have always been the trailblazers and kind of crazy adventurers. But then I realized this is where I want to be.
So tell me about your venture. I mean, what's your field? Are you in the world of events?
No, not at all. For 7 years, I've been working in film production. So I worked with clients like Euronews and the United Nations and Amnesty. A lot of NGO work, actually. And I traveled to Africa a bit to do documentaries. So documentary was always my passion. But I also worked with corporate companies as well to do film production. And then, to be honest, I just had a bit of a change of heart. My parents and I invested in this space where we just didn't really know what we wanted to do. So we've been planning and coming together and designing what we wanted. And I stopped working for my main client for film production and decided to focus a lot on this. And I still work with some clients, and that will be in the multimedia studio as well. So it's just kind of adapting now to a bit of a life change because I got a bit bored of that industry I was in. So
tell us about the concept. What is it?
Yeah, good question. And we've been killing each other over what it would be for months. It is a creative space and event space. So there'll be included a kitchenette, a garden terrace, a studio, and we'll be running weekly events, exclusive events, very kind of nice boutique events with chefs for tapas and wine tasting, painting, things like this. We're just really focusing on those special events weekly at the beginning and renting the space for creative use. So other people who want to run workshops or events and use the multimedia space, basically.
So is it the sort of place where you might attend a product launch, for example?
Yes, exactly. So there'll be a pop-up store as well. In the front, there'll be a small store where we'll sell some merchandise and local products. So we already have a really great network of people from Valencia. We went to an event the other week, and there were local brands making, you know, matcha products and selling local organic clothes, a kombucha brand as well. So a whole combination of local products that we want to feature. And I think that's really the special part because we want it to be a local place that makes innovation and business, but also sells and highlights local innovation as well. So, yeah.
I can imagine somebody might say, well, it's unfocused. What is this place?
Yeah, that's been our struggle a lot. we've had a lot of discussions on how we should focus it. And we decided to focus it on our passions, right? So we were doing our original plan was, okay, is it a film studio? Is it a photo studio? You know, what are we doing? And we had no idea. So we really thought about where the focus should be. And we just said, okay, let's focus on our passions. And let's select events that we would love to do, right? I've been working for 7 years basically in digital media and on the computer. So it was a time when I wanted to say, okay, I want to bring people together in a space, physical space. I don't want to be on my computer every day. So what's that connection that can bring people together? And Valencia is a culinary place, an outdoor place. So it's going to be a lot on the kind of fitness and wellness a bit, and also, that culinary culture too. So wine tasting, painting. My mom's an artist. My dad's been a teacher all his life in poetry and writing, right? So we'll also have that focus. It'll be a lot on those mixture of our passions. And there'll be consistent events every week. So it's not random changing all the time. So you can subscribe to this format, and every week you can come to the same event. So it's building a community in the same space, and very organized, clear, and yeah.
And it's in Rusafa, which is a neighborhood of gorgeous 18th and 19th century buildings, and it's about as cosmopolitan and multicultural as a neighborhood could possibly be, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So as I said, I've lived in many different countries in Europe, so I've seen what cities really stand out and have these artistic districts. And honestly, Rusafa really stands out with all of them. Like I said, I was in Nice, Munich, London, and Rusafa really, really stood out. So that says a lot. And I think it's becoming very international and very creative, and a lot of business. I mean, Spain was the fastest growing economy, I think, this year in Europe. So something is happening, and Rusafa is the center of that, to be honest, in Spain.
What would you say would be, for you, the most challenging part of it?
To be honest, I see a lot of negative stories online. And I don't think that really is fair, to be honest. I haven't experienced that many problems, to be honest. Like, I think Spain is really changing rapidly. And a lot of the complaints, I don't think, have been justified. So I have some other friends starting business. They're complaining about taxes all the time and how bad the administration is. And it takes so long. And I haven't really experienced that. We worked with a local design firm, architecture firm, and they obviously helped a lot with processes. But my initial reaction to Valencia was, I came because it's exactly what I wanted, right? So I loved Valencia, I loved the lifestyle. I lived, like I said, in other cities, and for example, in France for a year, and the French won't even basically look at you if you don't speak perfect French, especially if you're British. So honestly, here I haven't had any kind of much negativity. I love the locals. I love the culture. It's very international, becoming more international. And I feel like they're really wanting a lot of people to start businesses now. Okay. They're giving a lot of benefits for the autonomo. I've talked to the government a lot, and they've said you have a lot of tax cuts for certain things. You can get a lot of loans for starting a business. So it's been quite a good impression. I think the only struggle has been some construction issues with the old buildings in Rusafa, really. And I think that's it, to be honest.
Do you think there's a buzz around Spain, the country, not just around, I mean, obviously Rusafa is a buzzing community and it's really cool, it's really trendy. And a few years ago, a certain generation of people turned up with skinny jeans and fixie bikes and good coffee, and suddenly, boom, it's an amazing place and there are graphic artists working all over. But do you think there's that kind of buzz around Spain?
Yes. So, for example, Rusafa used to be, it was an amazing neighborhood in ancient times under the Muslim occupation. And then it changed into a really rough neighborhood with drugs and prostitution as well. And now it's then it went more artsy, and now it's becoming more of a business district as well. So that history just shows that it's really adapting. And Spain is going through a huge transformation. I think a lot of people are complaining about foreigners coming here and all the anti-tourism movement. But honestly, that's the biggest boom in their economy. If you look at the growth statistics, it's been tourism and foreigners. And we have a lot of friends here as well, Russians, Ukrainians, British, French, everything. And they're starting fantastic businesses. And that's brilliant. So hopefully this also pushes the salaries of Spanish people as well, because it's quite low. So this growth, I think, will only benefit people.
So you mentioned languages. Do you speak any Spanish?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe my girlfriend can argue against it. But I speak intermediate Spanish, and I'm taking lessons a lot. But I really need to rapidly improve for the business as well, because I don't want there just to be expats.
you're at the beginning phase of starting a new business. So what is your biggest concern or worry?
Obviously money. So it's just spending. And that's fine. We've planned for that. And it's always a risk. So financial risk, every business is, but we've planned quite well. So that should be okay. But obviously once you start making the success and seeing that first paycheck, it's going to be fantastic. And the second is probably administration. So we would like to get a food and drink license, for example. We don't have it yet. And it seems like it's going to be almost impossible from what I've heard. So that's maybe 10% of the business plan that has to maybe be paused until that. So that's the tricky thing. Sometimes it does seem like you have to wait for everything. We want to start before August, for example, but in August, nothing works in Valencia completely. So we just had to wait. And then September, everything starts again. And then for Christmas, I think it'll stop again, right? So it's just like chasing game. When it does work, it works quickly. But then you have seem to have these big periods, and then you have fires, which is just also everything stops, right? So you have to work in between that.
What would be your biggest dream, let's say, a couple of years from now?
So what I want is that locals and foreigners interact a lot. I have a worry that's going to be focused only on tourism and expats a lot. I really don't want that. I want a mixture. I would like to expand to other cities and make sure that people in other cities know as well, that they can come here and create in a creative studio and come to fantastic events. So yeah, so expansion and really integration into local people as well. And just running a smooth business, to be honest. I've never really done events before, so that's new, but I think if we're all passionate, it should be fine. So yeah, I'm excited, but you know, it's not easy as well. So we'll see.
So tell us, how do we find Robson Studios? How do we get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can check us out on Instagram at the Robson Studios and and on our website, therobsonstudios.com. Here you can see events to book, and you can rent the space through that as well. So everything will be all through the website. We'll update our Instagram a lot. And on my personal Instagram, I'm sharing very like TikTok style videos of my personal journey and struggles to start a business, because it's not the easiest thing, especially because it's a physical space. So we have problems as well, and I'm sharing that journey along the way. So we should be up and running in a couple months, depending on the Spanish regulations and construction speed. So yeah, we'll see, but that's where you can find us.
Many thanks to Jeremy Robson, and you can find more information about Jeremy's exciting new multimedia event space at therobsonstudios.com. That's therobsonstudios.com.
After the break, we're heading south of Granada to talk to Matilda Lojos, who makes her living selling innovative laundry room cabinets. Don't go away.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. Making sense of business in Spain.
Talk Radio Europe.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe with Mike McDowell and Simone Carlos.
Welcome back to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. I'm Simone Carlos.
And I'm Mike McDowell. And the stars of this program are expat freelancers and company owners.
Because this is the show that explores how to live, work and build a business in Spain.
If you are transplanted from anywhere in the world and you have a company here, or maybe you have an idea and you don't know how to get up and running, drop us a line and tell us your story. Whatever your line of work, if you make your living in Spain, we would like to hear from you.
The whole point of Business Roots is that the lessons you've learned can help other expat business owners to improve an existing venture or get a startup off the ground.
Because we are all in this together. And do let us know if you have a question about a particular aspect of starting or running a company in Spain. Either Simone or one of our featured business owners or experts will have the answer.
The address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio.
Earlier, we heard from Jeremy Robson in Valencia. Now we are heading directly southwest of there to Frigiliana, along the Costa Tropical, from where Matilda Lowhouse runs Wash Tower.
My name is Matilda Lowhouse. I live in Frigiliana, in the south of Spain, in the area of Malaga. And I've been living here since 2001, so quite a while already. And I have a business here since 4 years now, where I'm the distributor of Wash Tower, which is a company based in Holland, but I have my own shop here in south of Spain. And I distribute through the whole area of Spain.
What made you move to Spain?
Actually, I lived with my partner then in Mexico before we came to Spain. So I lived there for 7 years, and I really liked living abroad. So not living in where I'm from Holland. And so I decided to go back to Europe. My parents were getting older, deciding to go back to Europe, going somewhere where there was already Spanish speaking, and which makes then the most logical one was to go to Spain.
How did you end up in Frigiliana? I think a lot of people will know Frigiliana because it's a little white town in the mountains in Andalusia, and it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's a bit of a tourist hotspot, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's touristy because it is gorgeous. That's also what happens. If it wouldn't be a very nice place, there wouldn't be a lot of tourists. That's just one attracts the other. That's how it goes. But we actually went to the south first because we thought, well, that's probably the most Latin area or more, you know, Latino area of Spain. And really with a rucksack, with a backpack, just traveling around, first going to Tarifa, then went to Granada, then just do the route of Sevilla, Malaga and everything. And then we ended up in Frigiliana, and we really liked it. And we thought, okay, well, let's just leave our bags here and start looking for a job. And that's what we did. We just rented a place and looking for a job. So it wasn't really prepared or anything. It was just really something we knew. We want to live in Spain and let's just go and do it.
And do you live, make us all jealous now, do you live in one of those absolutely gorgeous white houses in one of the little higgledy-piggledy streets in Frigiliana?
Yes, I do. I actually live in the old town. But I can park my car here if I want to for a while. So that's very, very positive because that's almost impossible. I have the view of the Campo of the Mountains. So, yes, to be very, I think a lot of people will be jealous on the way I live. Because we're very, very lucky. We're very, very lucky that way, I have to say.
It's really mountainous. Holland is very flat. How are you coping?
You do get used to it. I notice it a lot when people from Holland come and visit. That Holland is very flat, and I sort of forgot about it already, I think, because I got so used to driving in the mountains as well. And I noticed that when people come here and they have to drive to, there is a holiday lab that I rent out as well, as you know. And if people go there the first time they drive there, they're always a bit afraid because of the roads being so small and mountainous, and always afraid that maybe they come somebody, you know, they meet somebody on the way. So I got really, really used to actually working and living in the mountainous area.
I should come clean, shouldn't I? I should come clean and explain to everybody listening that I've stayed in your holiday let, right? Casa 14.
Exactly.
And it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's just amazing. Just outside Frigiliana, but walking distance to the old town. And oh my goodness me, highly recommended. My kids, they loved it. They absolutely loved it, yeah. We had such a good time, so thank you for that. Do you own that building?
Yes, I do, yes. That was actually an investment at that time as well, because when we came here, coming from Mexico, and we did travel a half a year before we came to Spain, so there was actually no money left. And so we had to sort of start working again, and then to buy a property. It had to be with a full-on mortgage, so we weren't able to live there and pay the mortgage. And by that time, the rentals were a lot cheaper than they are now, so it was for us better to rent out that place to pay off the mortgage. And that was sort of an investment that we did to be able to own a house here. and which worked out quite well because we bought it in 2008, and by now, you know, part of it is paid off, and by the rentals that we have. So that was our way of doing a first small investment and getting starting on a property market.
You're married. Do you have kids?
Yes, I have one son. He was born here. He's 19 years old. And he was born here and goes to school here and everything. So his life has been always here in Spain.
Did he go to school in Frigiliana? Or we should explain to people that if they haven't heard of Frigiliana, if they follow the coastline along with their finger, they'll eventually find a place called Nerja, N-E-R-J-A. And Frigiliana is inland of Nerja. Not very far, actually. Just a few minutes in the car, right? So what a place to grow up. Oh my goodness!
You know what I really, really like here in this village, and for him as well. It's, I mean, he's Dutch. You know, he has Dutch parents, passport, and but he grew up. I mean, he obviously was born here, so he grew up here in Spain. But in the village, there's so many different nationalities. So in his class, they had people from Scotland, from Germany, from Denmark, from Holland, Spain, from Madrid, Spain here from the village. So there's such a cosmopolitan small village, actually. So I think that's just a huge experience to have growing up like that.
Yeah. So as somebody who has done holiday lets for quite some time, before you began your business 4 years ago, you had an idea of what the red tape and the bureaucracy was going to be like, right?
Yeah, probably. But I think, to be very honest, I think bureaucracy and red tape, you'll probably find that everywhere in every country. And I think for a lot of foreigners that have that start a business here, I think the biggest problem that they have, or the biggest thing to overcome, is the language.
I agree.
Then they have to reduce themselves by finding English-speaking lawyers, English-speaking accountants, English-speaking, and that's, you know, your choice becomes a lot less.
Yeah, I agree. And I think people come to Spain, and what they're not prepared for is the fact that they, as one of our guests pointed out a couple of weeks ago, they're starting again. So they're doing everything that you've spent a lifetime doing in your home country, suddenly you're dropped in Spain and you have to get it all done in a year or two. And then, so you're starting everything from scratch, not just business. And then there's the fact that things are done differently here. So you've got to get your head around that as well. And then there's the language. So there are those three big things, you know, which mean. And people say, oh, the red tape, it's terrible. It's not really. It's not so bad, you know. Before we go any further, you've got to tell us about Wash Tower before we forget all about it and get caught up in other things. So it's not Watch Tower, it's Wash Tower.
This is an idea that came actually from my brother-in-law. He had a background in kitchens, and he always thought, why is there not a furniture, a cabinet that exists where you could put your wash machine in? So just so have it higher up, so you don't have to bend to do the washing. Because it's a bit like with ovens in kitchens, you know, before in the older days, we had them under the hob, they were lower down, and now there's always on a height where it's easy to introduce your baking trays or whatever, and for the washing machines and dryers, it would be the same. Instead of bending and finding the program that you need, you know, you have everything on a level, which is just a lot easier to use. And most of those, you know, cabinets, they're not strong enough, or they're not wide enough, or so these ones are made now to fit washing machines or dryers, and it's like a modular system. So it's a bit like the IKEA system, where you can build your own and design your own, where you can put cabinets on the top or on the sides. You can make it as big as a full kitchen. And it's something that really didn't exist. And it doesn't exist in Spain either. Luckily, I'm the only one.
So it's a modular laundry cupboard system.
Yeah. People think, do I need that? And then you start and you see it and you think, oh, actually, that's a good idea. Actually, it is. It is something I might need. Most of my advertisements is on Google Ads. It's incredible how many people do look for this type of furniture. So by searching words for it, like lifting up your washing machine or cabinet for washing machine, laundry room ideas, it's incredible how many people somehow do look for this type of furniture.
Wow. Okay. And you're doing well.
Yes, I'm doing very well. Yes, it's very successful, I have to say. And it's very diverse as well, because I am the one that answers the phone if I do customer service. So if people want to have a question or something, I pick up the phone. If there is issues in the warehouse, because I do have the furniture stocked here in Malaga, so there's a part of a warehouse that I rent where I have all the furniture that comes from Holland. So every so often a full truckload comes with all the furniture. And so if there's issues in the warehouse, I have to deal with the people in the warehouse, and I have to deal with clients and with my gestor, accounting, marketing, social media. It's quite a lot of different things to think about. But it was something new and very interesting, and luckily it's paying my bills. So.
Well, that's great. I mean, it sounds like you're handling just about every aspect of the business. And I wondered, what's the most difficult thing? And is there anything that's like an absolute joy, that's just so easy, it's great?
Well, there's one thing that I forgot, because I haven't dealt with customers directly for a long time. And that is something where you think, I mean, they're so diverse. Every customer is so diverse. Some people are so easygoing, and if there's a small issue, they like to think with you in how to solve it. And then you've got the other one that gets angry and defensive immediately. And so all these different types of clients, that is something that was sometimes a bit of a challenge.
Do you think the Spanish government makes life a little bit difficult for entrepreneurs?
Well, not only entrepreneurs. I think for people that work as autónomo, it's difficult for people, because if you would start as an autónomo and you don't have a lot of clients yet, but you do still have to pay the full amount, it's very difficult, I think, to get a start, to because you need a year or 2 years minimum to be able to really cover the cost that you have already.
No, sure. What's been the most fun aspect of starting a business here?
Well, starting a business here, for me, the huge difference is obviously that you're responsible for all the different aspects. The fact that I can do it, you know, at home. So the flexibility it gave to me. But I think that's probably a bit of a general thing. It's not just Spain. I'm not, because it's been very successful. Well, that is the fun about it, actually, seeing it becoming a success pretty quickly. That was a lot of fun for me.
What would be your number one piece of advice for anyone thinking of starting a business in Spain?
Learn the language. Try as much as you can learning the language and understanding, because otherwise you narrow yourself. So I understand it's not something easy, but I think even if you would just try, having some of the language, that would think would already be a big advantage.
Remind us, where can we find this amazing furniture so that we don't have to kneel down anymore to put the laundry in the machine?
It's washtower.es. That's the Spanish one. And if you would even Google it, Wash Tower, you would find us as well.
Many thanks to Matilda Lohaus. And that web address is washtower.es.
Don't forget to drop us a line. The address is simone@tre.radio. We've had a bunch of emails this week, and Simone will be answering your questions after the break. Stay with us.
TRE.radio.
This is Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe, the expat entrepreneur's Spanish survival guide.
Welcome back to Business Roots on Talk Radio Europe. I'm Mike McDowell.
And I'm Simone Carlos.
We are shining a spotlight on the remarkable stories of foreign business owners right here in Spain.
Whether you're just starting out or you're already established, we want to help make your Spanish business a success.
So drop us a line and tell us all about yourself and your enterprise. Tell us your story and let us know if you have a question about anything to do with starting or running a company in Spain, big or small. And both Simone and I always say, we are just as interested in those of you who are registered as autónomo as we are in those with limited companies, even with a lot of employees.
Send us an email. The address is simone@tre.radio. That's simone@tre.radio.
As always, in this part of the program, with a little bit of help from me, Simone is going to answer a few questions. And the first email this week is from Janet in Marbella. She is asking about the British Chamber of Commerce in Spain. Can they help her to set up a new business?
Oh, this is a good question. So, Janet, yes. The British Chamber of Commerce in Spain can be really useful.
Yeah, exactly. They've been around since 1908. They started in Barcelona. Now they're in Madrid, Malaga, Bilbao. They're all over the country. They've got about 300 member companies. So it's quite well established.
But they're not going to help you fill out your tax forms or register as autónomo. That's not what they do. What they are brilliant for is connecting you with other people in business. They run networking events, business breakfasts, webinars, and other similar events.
So if you are looking for clients, suppliers, or even just somebody who understands what it's like being British or an English-speaking expat in the Spanish business world, that is where the Chamber shines.
Membership costs a few hundred euros a year, depending on your business size. And honestly, most people find them more useful once their business is already up and running, rather than right at the beginning.
For the nitty-gritty stuff, registering, licenses, tax returns, you will still need a gestoría or an accountant. But for making connections and finding English-speaking professionals, the Chamber is brilliant for that.
And they promote British business interests too, which has been especially important since Brexit. So, Janet, think of them as your networking hub rather than your startup advisor. To get in touch, Google British Chamber of Commerce in Spain.
Okay, next question. This one is from David in Valencia. He wants to know if the Spanish government actually gives grants or loans to help people start businesses. And the short answer is yes. Yes, they do. They absolutely do. Spain actually offers quite a lot of support. The problem is you've got to know where to look for it.
There's an organization called ENISA. It's the national innovation company, and they give out low-cost loans. These can be anything from 25,000 euros up to 300,000 euros.
And the interest rates on those loans are tied to how well your company is performing, which is pretty clever, actually. Plus, if you are under the age of 41 when you're starting up, you can get up to 75,000 euros as a loan without any personal guarantees. And that's huge. You wouldn't get that anywhere else.
Then there is CDTI, which focuses on tech startups. They offer grants up to 250,000 euros if you've got a unique technology-based business that's less than 3 years old. That's CDTI.
And now here's where it gets even better. Each region of Spain has its own programs too. Madrid Emprende, Barcelona Activa, they all have grants ranging from 25 to 50,000 euros. Plus, they have free advice and free or very cheap co-working spaces and offices.
We're talking serious money here. For example, the Spanish government has made 600 million euros available for AI startups.
But, and this is important to know, David, these grants are competitive. You will need detailed business plans, financial projections, and most of the applications are, of course, in Spanish.
Which is why most British entrepreneurs work with consultants or gestorías who specialize in grant applications. They know the system and can really improve your chances.
Actually, the British Chamber of Commerce in Spain can help you to find a specialist gestoría, so the support is definitely there. You just need to be organized, meet the deadlines, and probably get professional help with the paperwork. But yes, 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 Spain wants to help new businesses get started. Okay, this email's from Sarah, who's in Madrid. She is asking if there are any places that she can go for free business advice.
Yes, Sarah. There's actually a lot of free help available. You just need to know what these places are called because the names are a bit Spanish.
Well, we are in Spain, Simone.
Fair point. Okay, so the main ones are called PAEs, Puntos de Atención al Emprendedor. That means Entrepreneur Service Points. They're all over Spain, usually at the town halls.
And that's a great new word for us all to learn. Emprendedor is Spanish for entrepreneur, so look out for that. And these points, these places, give you free advice on everything from choosing whether to be autónomo or an SL, to understanding your tax obligations, to finding grants.
In Madrid specifically, there is a place called Ventanilla Única del Emprendimiento, or VUE. They offer free advice on absolutely everything business related. That's Madrid VUE.
Yeah, so you can Google that, Madrid VUE. Madrid also has 6 business incubators scattered around different districts of the city. They've got co-working spaces, low-cost offices, and of course, advisors who can help you with any aspect at all of starting a business in Spain.
Barcelona has Barcelona Activa, which even has a service specifically for international entrepreneurs.
Here's the catch, Sarah. Most of these services are in Spanish. You will find English in the big cities, like we said, like in Barcelona at Barcelona Activa, and probably in Madrid too. But do not expect everyone to be bilingual.
Which is honestly why a lot of expat business owners end up paying for an English-speaking gestoría anyway.
Yeah, when it comes to actually doing all of your paperwork, filing your taxes, and making sure everything's right, most people find that it's worth paying someone who can explain everything in English to make sure you don't make expensive mistakes. Okay, this next question is from Emma, who is actually in Barcelona. She doesn't reveal what business she plans to start, but she says, "Be honest with me, how hard is this really going to be?"
I love that she wants us to be honest. Okay, Emma, here's the truth. There is a lot of bureaucracy, but thousands of British people do this successfully every year.
The actual registration bit, becoming autónomo or setting up an SL, is not too bad. You can do it online. It takes a few weeks and it costs anywhere from 300 euros for simple autónomo registration up to maybe 3,000 for forming a company.
Where it gets a little bit trickier is the ongoing stuff. Quarterly VAT returns, quarterly income tax payments, annual filings.
Most people say the first 3 to 6 months are the hardest. You are learning the system, getting everything set up, and of course making mistakes.
But once everything's running and you've got a good accountant, it becomes perfectly manageable. The quarterly routine becomes normal.
So Emma, yes, it is a little bit harder than the UK, but that's mostly down to the language barrier. Budget, time and money for professional help, expect delays, keep great records, and above all else, be patient. If you do those things, you will be fine. All right, that is all we've got time for today. Keep sending those questions in and we will keep answering them. Next week, we're going to be chatting to Cheryl Schubert, who, after a quarter of a century working in the corporate world, now helps executives and their teams navigate change. And she coaches business leaders around the world from her home in the east of Spain.
For example, if you have a brand new leadership team or your post-merger and you want the teams to really assimilate, instead of the groups sitting on a Zoom call being told how they should act and going away and doing what they've always done, I bring them together in a way that allows them to align on how they want to move forward together. My background is in corporate technology, big Fortune 500 companies, but right now I'm doing a lot more of the online work with companies who are new to, I guess, reaching across the lines and growing in the global way and bringing their counterparts along with them. A lot of it's about designing questions that allow them to really think about what it is they want to do next. We tend to think about what we've done and that's what we build on versus, well, what are my strengths and what are your strengths and what is that other individual's strengths and how do we leverage all of those given the challenges, opportunities that are in front of us. So it's really about designing the activities, designing the questions that allow for really thoughtful conversations. And that's kind of the point, right? I mean, when you think about all of our companies, the most important part of our company is our people. And if we don't take care of those people and we don't listen to those people and we don't appreciate and respect and honor those people, technology doesn't matter.
You can hear the full interview with Cheryl next week here on Business Roots.
Plus, more fascinating stories from people perhaps just like you who have stepped out of their old lives and started fresh here in Spain.
Adios, everyone.
Radio Europe. You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalog of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit TRE.radio.